The next case on our calendar, 05-1222, State of Ohio Lake Trail, Mark Dan versus Bob Taft as governor. Mrs. Trafford.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. I would like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal, if that's appropriate. May it please the court. The issue in this case is very narrow. The issue is whether written reports the governor receives at his request from members of the executive agency cabinet and his own internal advisors are public records such that they must be disclosed automatically upon demand for any reason to any person without any showing of special need or without any opportunity for judicial review. It's the respondent's position that the Constitution of Ohio answers this question. Under the Constitution of Ohio, it's the governor's right to decide whether this particular type of information, information he receives at his request from his cabinet directors and internal advisors, public records.
But you do have to admit that these do fall under the public records.
Your Honor, we would agree that under the definition of record for purposes of the public record statute, that they would constitute records. But the issue in this case is whether, as a result of the Ohio Constitution, these records are privileged from public disclosure.
Counsel, could we establish a few things here?
Yes.
You do not claim that the governor has any federal constitutionally established privilege or right.
No, it's under the Ohio Constitution.
Under the Ohio Constitution exclusively.
Yes.
All right. And you just acknowledged the Public Records Act does apply and cover all of the documents in question.
They would fall within the definition of records under the Public Records Statute. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So you're asking this court to infer or imply from the Constitution. There is no express language in the Ohio Constitution about presidential privilege or gubernatorial privilege or the right to keep confidential communications, written or oral, with the governor.
It is not stated in those terms, Your Honor. We do believe.
So you need us in order to establish an exception to the Public Records Act, the governor, Governor Taft, is asking this court to find an implied privilege. Would it be fair to call it a privilege?
I think it would be fair to call it the executive privilege because it is the same privilege that's recognized under the United States Constitution.
You would be asking us to find an implied privilege in the Ohio Constitution that accepts executive communication from the Public Records Act.
Your Honor, the only qualification I would have with agreeing with that is there is an express constitutional provision at issue here, and that's Article 3, Section 6.
And it doesn't say anything about those reports being private or privileged.
It doesn't use the term private or privileged, but it does give the governor the right, the express constitutional right, to request that these reports be prepared for his use.
And Article 4, Section 20 requires every official to furnish a report annually to the General Assembly, does it not?
Yes, Your Honor. And we would have no quarrel with those being public records.
All right.
The question now, here is whether the reports that the governor asked for under his authority can be forced to be publicly disclosed under the general public records statute.
You've addressed this in the brief, but it's not clear to me. What are the outer boundaries? What are the parameters, the limits to this cloak of secrecy that the governor is asking us to imply exists, or this privilege enabling the governor to keep secret any communication or document? To whom does it apply? How far does it reach?
Your Honor, the specific privilege we're talking about in this case is the executive privilege, which is the governor's privilege. And it's not a secrecy privilege, Your Honor. The privilege is these are records that the governor needs in order to be able to discharge his own constitutional duties.
And how broad does it go? Does it, as in In Re Seal that you rely on heavily, does it apply to communications between governor's administrative staff one to another?
It would apply to communications that the governor requests or receives from either his executive internal advisors, his internal policy advisors, or the cabinet directors.
That's why I started out my question the way I did, assuming that there is a executive privilege. Not everything in the weekly reports would be covered by that. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor, we would disagree with that. We would contend that everything in these weekly reports are covered by the privilege.
But go ahead.
It's the circumstances under which these reports are prepared. These reports are requested by the governor. The governor asks the cabinet directors every week, give me a short memo at the end of the week. The cabinet directors provide that memo and also the internal policy advisors. These weekly reports become the basis for setting the agenda for the governor's weekly policy deliberation meeting.
I'm sure, though, that there are parts of those weekly reports that are just routine. I am also sure that there are recommendations that the governor certainly wouldn't want the public to know, and that's why executive privilege has been created. But certainly not all of these weekly reports fall under that executive privilege.
We would contend they do, Your Honor, and for this reason. The executive privilege we're talking about in this instance, the executive communication privileges, is not limited, as is the deliberative process privilege. It applies to factual information as well. And that was the holding in the United States versus Nixon case.
Well, counsel, but most of your justification that you're giving here and have given in your brief is for deliberative process kind of claim of privilege rather than the more extreme presidential privilege or executive privilege. But let me take you beyond that. As I read your brief, you don't even want the governor, Governor Taft doesn't want to be curtailed in the same way that the Supreme Court curtailed the president in the Nixon case. And after all, Nixon lost. They described for the first time executive privilege and then said, you don't get it. And we're very clear that the court had to arbitrate this in each and every case and sent it back for an in-camera inspection of the records. It seems to me from your brief that you're saying the governor claims it and that's the end of it. There's no judicial process that can even inquire.
That's right, Your Honor, and because there's a difference in context here.
So you're taking it beyond Nixon?
No, Your Honor.
Sure, no. You are.
It's a different circumstance here. What Nixon says is there is a presumptive privilege, and what the United States Supreme Court held in Nixon and again in the Cheney decision is that when you have this privilege, then you have to, it's not an absolute privilege,
right,
but the circumstances under which it can be overridden is a situation where one of the other branches of government needs that information for evidentiary purposes.
And you're that's asking why us to first recognize executive privilege, are you not?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
You're asking us to first simply recognize executive privilege in Ohio.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. This court has not yet addressed this particular issue. But in asking for the court to address this issue and adopt executive privilege in Ohio, we stand, I believe, on very solid authority, both from the United States Supreme Court in the Nixon case and in the Cheney case, and also the authority of this court in the Steffen versus Kraft case.
Assume for the moment that we recognize it. Is there any burden on the individual making a request?
No, Your Honor, that there can't be under the Public Records Act, and that's why this case is different. When we're talking in the context of a public record statute, and you're talking a privilege that is rooted in the separation of powers doctrine, in this context, there is no competing need on the part of one of the other branches of government. Your Honor, we would have a very different case if there was a pending criminal case or a civil case in which information covered by this privilege would be needed by a court in order to discharge its duties.
So what you're saying is that Senator Dan's appearance here as an individual, as opposed to the head of a Senate investigative committee, makes a huge difference, in the result, regardless of whether or not we recognize privilege or not.
Yes, Your Honor, because...
So the capacity of the requester becomes important, whether it's a grand jury, criminal investigation, Senate Investigative Committee.
And it's even more...
I want to make sure I understand. Is that your position?
Yes, and it's more precise
but
than
but
that.
But we do have investigations going on in the state right now, and that is why these weekly reports are important, to determine just when the governor knew what was going on with the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, whether he did know about it. So there's a purpose in obtaining these. It isn't that someone just idly wants to review them.
But none of those agencies are here asking for that.
That's precisely the point, Your Honor. If we were talking about a case pending in court where any of this information was determined by a court to be necessary for it to perform its own essential duties of resolving a pending criminal or civil case, that would be a different inquiry.
And then that goes to your point about the executive department being different from the judicial department or the legislative department in carrying on official functions of the judicial branch of government, such as a grand jury investigation or conduct of a criminal court proceeding, or a legislative investigative proceeding.
Yes, Your Honor.
As opposed to a simple request for information.
Yes, Your Honor. That's precisely the
now,
very...
Now, am I clear that there is a legislative privilege also in the law?
Yes, there is, Your Honor. There's a legislative privilege both constitutionally and by statute. By constitution, the same separation of powers principle allows certain legislative information legislators obtain from their own internal staffs. The legislature also enacted a statute.
That's expressed in the Constitution, is it not?
No, Your Honor, it's not in terms of the records. The only reference in the Constitution is to the speech and debate clause. It derives from that, but also from the separation of powers.
Counsel, in the Nixon case, which is the first time that there's any discussion of executive privilege, the Supreme Court says, you know, we've never discussed this subject before. There was no Public Records Act, or the Freedom of Information Act did not apply to this.
Correct.
You did not have a statute that the Congress had enacted that said these are public records that the Supreme Court was then having to trump with the Constitution. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And, then in the second Nixon case, when Nixon sues to get his records, the court weighs in and says, but here we have a statute enacted by the Congress saying these records are now going over to the General Services Administration and to the archives, and Nixon is not the owner of them, and he lost that. And they said, the interests of the country, as expressed by the Congress, trumps the claim of executive privilege. So they say when there is an express statute, that takes it away. And isn't that what we have here?
No, Your Honor, I don't think that was what they were saying in the second Nixon case. And I'd also refer the court to the public citizen case, public citizen versus Department of Justice. That is the analogous case to this.
Now,
there was a
I just have one more thing, and I don't want to take any more of your time and let others ask questions. I want to know how you get around Article 1, Section 2 of the Ohio Constitution, the Bill of Rights, which says all political power inherent in the people is inherent in the people. Government is instituted for the equal protection and benefit, and they have the right to alter, reform, or abolish the same whenever it may deem it necessary. And no special privileges or immunities shall ever be granted, and you've acknowledged this is an immunity that the governor's claiming, shall ever be granted that may not be altered, revoked, or repealed by the General Assembly. And isn't that precisely what the General Assembly did with the Public Records Act? You claim the governor has a privilege. They took it away.
No, Your Honor.
And doesn't that comport with Article 1, Section 2?
And I think what you really have to read is also the will of the people as expressed in Article 3, Section 6, the will of the people was that the governor would be the chief executive officer of this state. And the people of this state said, we want the governor to see that the laws are faithfully executed. And in order for the governor to be able to do his job, the people determined that he should have the ability, he should have the right to require information from the executive branch so that he could do his job. The privilege we're asserting,
it does not say anything about secrecy.
It does not. But the courts have said that that is the necessary implication when you have the separation of powers.
The Supreme Court said that interpreting the U.S. Constitution, but we have a different Constitution.
And this court said that in Stephan versus Kraft, interpreting the separation of powers as it would apply to judicial records as well. There is symmetry in the federal Constitution and in the Ohio Constitution. The separation of powers, as recognized by this court and as recognized by Supreme Courts, a number of courts across the country, and they've all recognized that this confidentiality of a governor's communications with his own staff is not only his right, but it's an important right for the people, because it is human nature that tells us that a governor with these kind of responsibilities must have access to information. Not just secret information, but information that will enable him to perform his constitutional duties. And the courts are consistent in recognizing that this is an important right, not just for one governor, for all governors, and for the people themselves.
Ms. Trafford, let me ask you, this case, obviously whatever law we write in this case will be binding not just on the current governor, but on future governors. And therefore, I think we need to be very careful in whatever we do if we find any kind of any sort of privilege, and there are variations, some structure for that, how the privilege is determined, who has the burden, of proving, is there a presumption? What kind of structure would you suggest to the court that would give us a plan for proceeding with future governors, in particular with future governors, on the availability of these memos that governors have that obviously help them in their policy decisions and give them information they need?
Yes, Your Honor. With respect, and let me clarify if it was not clear, we're talking about a very discrete subset of information. This is information the governor has requested from his advisors and his executive cabinet officials, a very already well-defined and circumscribed group of people, information he has requested so that he can carry out his functions. In this context, we believe that is where the privilege is up to the governor to decide if the information should be routinely, publicly disclosed, or if it should be disclosed in any particular instance because of the public interest.
Okay, now.
And that has happened here.
Okay, let's stop there. Now, if someone seeks to break that privilege or challenge the governor on his decision, his or her decision to keep certain records private, what's the process? What should the process be? Should there be a burden on that person to show, or that entity to show, that they have some special need for it, such as a grand jury, Jaworski, Nixon, or a committee of the Senate or the House, House or Senate, investigating something? What should the steps be in how one challenges, assuming a governor asserts, right, you know, this privilege?
And I think, Your Honor, the steps should depend on the context in which the request is made and the privilege is asserted. What you have is a continuum, and I believe it's the continuum is dictated by the Constitution itself. If, on the one hand, the governor has asserted the privilege for these executive communications, and there is no other proceeding pending before any other branch of government, there is no grand jury, there is no pending criminal or civil case, there is no legislative committee. In that context, according to the Supreme Court in the Cheney decision, that is when the governor's decision is at its greatest. The very highest respect is due to the governor's determination in that context whether or not to release information publicly. And That doesn't mean it's necessarily going to be secret. It just means it's going to be the governor who makes the decision whether or not that's in the public interest. And the governor and all future governors will be accountable to the people for the decisions they make, including the decision of whether or not to provide information. In other situations, if there is a pending criminal or civil case, at that point it becomes the prerogative of the judiciary to decide whether or not, in that context, the judiciary's need for the information is greater than the president or than the governor's need for confidentiality. In that situation, the court would decide, and I believe the structure the court would use would be first, I think the governor would assert the privilege, then the court would turn to the person asking for the information and determine whether or not they have a special need for that information that would overcome the privilege.
Now, and you're contending that Senator Dan is not the right person to be requesting this information.
Senator Dan is requesting this under the public record statute, so he stands in no different position than any citizen who would say, I just want to know.
Would you have a different argument if, and I don't know who's conducting these grand jury investigations at the present time, but would your argument be any different if one of those prosecutors requested this information?
Yes, Your Honor, the analysis, I believe, would be different because there, under the separation of powers, now you have a different branch of government saying if the governor asserts an executive privilege, then that could impact our ability to discharge our legitimate legislative functions or the judicial functions of the court. So, yes, there the analysis would be different, and that's where the court's role would come in.
Is the analysis different with respect to the deliberative process privilege or the communications, executive communications privilege, in your view?
Yes, Your Honor, they are different. They're different both in terms of who has the privilege and also what it covers. The deliberative process privilege, and the best definition and analysis I can give you would be to cite you to the sealed case decision. The deliberative process privilege is a common law privilege, not a constitutional privilege. And it's broader in the sense that it may be asserted by executive officers other than the governor.
But that's not at issue in this case.
That is not at issue in this case.
Okay, so
what's at issue in this case is the executive communications privilege, which is the governor's privilege, and it's broader in that it does cover factual information.
Well,
and there's a reason. There's a reason why, Your Honor, that. And I believe if you look at the Vermont Supreme Court's decision in the Dean case, Governor Dean's case, it helps explain this. When you're dealing with a chief executive officer, it's much, much harder to draw that line of where a deliberation might start. When you're talking about the chief executive who has such broad responsibility under the Constitution for all these many areas of executive branch operations, he has a need to know, an information gathering need to know. These weekly reports are his heads up, something might be coming. If you can't have that early information, even though it may be routine and factual, that becomes the food for thought that someday will grow into policy deliberations or into some other kind of decision making. But to say that the governor's privilege only extends to a very narrowly confined category of documents that are deliberative documents doesn't give sufficient respect to the range of decision-making the governor is involved in. And that's what these courts are saying.
Do you see this Steffen case then being a blueprint for our determination of this privilege vis-a-vis the Open Records Act?
I do, Your Honor, for this reason. I think the court was very clear in Steffen when it said we must construe the public records in order to have a constitutional result. And the concern in Steffen was the court's concern that if you said judicial records were subject to the Public Records Act, and literally they would be, I mean, there was no express exemption for judicial records, that that would create a problem under the separation of powers doctrine. Mm-hmm. I think that same rationale applies here. When you look at the public record statute, you want to make sure that we're construing it in a constitutional manner. We have to presume that's what the General Assembly would have intended as well. And to do so, to avoid this conflict with the separation of powers and the governor's power under Article 3, Section 6, would be to construe the public record statute the same way you did in Stephan and say that would not be intended. The practical way to do that, I think, is to say it does fall within the exception as other privileges have been recognized. And again, I would urge the court to look at the Supreme Court's decision in Public Citizen versus the Department of Justice, because that was a public record statute, and that was decided on the separation of powers. And the majority of the Supreme Court did what this court did in Stephan versus Kraft. They said if we decide, the issue there was information prepared by the ABA and given to the governor, to the president, to assist him in making judicial appointments. The majority of the court looked at the statute and to determine whether or not that information, once it was received by the president, would be a matter of public record, as the statute would require. The court, if you look at it, took great pains in construing the statute and determined that the statute did not apply, because to do so would create formidable constitutional problems. And I'd encourage you to read the concurring opinion by Justice Kennedy, which was joined by Chief Justice Rehnquist and Justice O'Connor, because they believed that the federal public record statute would have applied to those communications to the president. And they held that, in their opinion, that would be unconstitutional under the separation of powers.
Let me ask you, we're taking you well beyond your time, and I'll give Mr. Geddes certainly more time than 15 minutes. But I want to make sure that the fact that the state has not raised the deliberative process privilege, as you know, Mr. Geddes argues it in his brief. Again, we have the opportunity here. This case is important because, first time, we have the opportunity to write law that is going to bind this governor and future governors. Hopefully we don't have a case like this again, that we can write law that's clear enough. The deliberative process privilege, I think you gave a partial answer to Justice O'Donnell, but I want to make sure you have a chance to explain your position on that, because we have several options here, obviously, from no privilege at all, everything's open, to different kinds of privileges. And your answer sounded as if it was a response to the deliberative process or deliberative process privilege, but I want to make sure that
you don't think
because you didn't raise it as a reason that it's not available to us to apply.
Right. Why it was not asserted as an affirmative defense in this case, and why we stress the executive communication privilege, Your Honor, is this. The type of, it's both because of how narrow the record in this case really is. The records here are these weekly reports. These records fall right at the very heart of Article 3, Section 6 of the Constitution, and right at the very heart of the separation of powers doctrine, recognizing executive privilege in the other cases. That is the very narrowest way to decide this case. We would agree, if you were going to apply the very literal deliberative process privilege, the common law deliberative process privilege instead, that then the court has to get into the analysis and do a review of the content of the material. Your Honor, that has both practical...
On a case-by-case basis, you mean?
Yes. You literally, any time anyone asks for these kind of records, it would come to this court, and you would have to sit there and read all these reports and decide, is this deliberative or is this
factual? It wouldn't
necessarily
come here.
It would
ordinarily go, as the Chief is trying to establish, we're interested in a process that goes well beyond this case.
Mm-hmm.
For the governor's own purposes, and let me just state it the way it appears, you're claiming executive, an executive privilege exists, and you want it applied. because that's probably the only one that protects this information, that a deliberative process privilege, if we found that's what the governor has and that's all that he has, this information may or may not have to be given up. And
that's correct.
But we're more interested in what should be the boundaries be, and we do have a statute here that expresses the legislature's view of the public interest of the citizens of the state and how the government's operated. And we haven't even gotten into, but you're wanting us to imply certain things in the Constitution. The Constitution certainly expresses the view that we should have open government in the state of Ohio. It tells the legislature they have to be open. The courts are open. And so there are competing interests here, and I think what we're trying to find out, you wave off in your brief, you clearly wave it off, the deliberative process privilege, and say we're not even claiming it.
We are not claiming it here. Based upon the record, the information.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that the governor of this state believes he doesn't have it.
Oh, absolutely not, Your Honor. Right. There will be cases in which the deliberative process privilege would be a proper privilege for both the governor and other executive officers.
I have one question.
It's just not this case.
Am I correct that the governor did turn over some of these weekly reports?
The vast majority of them, Your Honor. The request was for all the weekly reports prepared by the administrator of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation from the beginning of the governor's administration to the present. All those have now been turned over.
Now, what troubles me is the fact that he turned these over and now is raising the issue of executive privilege. I have a difficult time understanding how he can turn over some and then say now, I have executive privilege and I don't have to turn these over.
Let me explain, Your Honor, because the factual history of this is important. When the request came in for the weekly reports, both from the administrator of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation and also for what the internal policy advisors to the governor quite clearly asserted the privilege. He said, no, these are not public records. These are subject to the executive privilege and Article 3.
Well, he was incorrect there where he said they weren't public records. They may be subject to the executive privilege, but they certainly are public records.
They weren't subject to the public records law. The decision was made by the governor to voluntarily produce these records. And in the past, the governor has made similar situations. It's been the governor's policy that these records are not subject to the public records law, but that if someone would ask for the request and it would be narrow in terms of what was being asked and narrow in terms of the time frame, the governor has on occasion provided the information. But that's the important point in this case. The governor is making that decision voluntarily. His decision to provide information because he determines it's in the public interest does not implicate separation of powers. And it's also, I think, an important fact for this reason. This does not mean that there is the cloak of secrecy. Information is available. The question is, who has the right to determine whether this type of information, the information that affects the governor's decision-making process, his right to have information from his advisors, whether he has the right to decide if that should be public.
Well, and there's to follow up on that, the suggestion is that the legislature has already asserted itself with respect to the public records law and said these should be public records. But I think if I understand your argument, that's the legislative position, and the governor, on a claim of separation of powers, is asserting executive privilege as an exception to his requirement to comply in revealing or in disclosing the public records.
With respect to these records.
To these records.
Yes, Your Honor.
And with respect to what he's already delivered, he's waived his privilege, but he's still asserting it. Am I right
still
about
asserting
that?
It. Yes, he is still asserting that there is no compulsion under the public records law to provide this information.
Yes.
But he's certainly free to provide it. And as we see in situations, it will be provided. And as as the commentators and some of the courts have recognized, there is a check and balance on that.
And that's the reason why you say in certain of the judicial proceedings, such as grand jury or criminal investigations, or even in civil cases, you have the contest between the assertion of executive privilege, if in fact we recognize it in Ohio in whatever form, as opposed to the judicial branch or the legislative branch in conducting their functions according to the constitutional mandate.
Yes, Your Honor. And in that context, it would be up to this court to do that kind of balancing.
Thank you.
But not in the context of a public records
case. Thank you, Ms. Trafford.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Geddes, you've been very patient.
Mr. Geddes, before you get going, I have a process question, and rather than interrupt you after you get into the heart of it. In Mrs. Trafford's brief, she indicates that they've essentially given up all of this, and you argue there's much that our request covers that hasn't been given to your client. So where are we? I mean, if they've given it all up, then this is sort of an academic exercise.
Your Honor, they have not given it up. They have provided all of the reports for Mr. Conrad in his capacity as the executive for the Bureau of Workers' Compensation. They have refused to give us over 200 reports for Mr. Samuel in his capacity as the executive assistant covering Development Department, PUCO, Public Utilities Commission, the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, the Industrial Commission, the Ohio Department of Transportation, other than a few extremely redacted portions of his reports that concern the Bureau of Workers' Compensation. Senator Dan's request was not limited to information about the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, although that was, of course, the precipitating reason for the request. The requests make it clear he wants to look at the much beyond just the Bureau of Workers' Compensation. So to answer your question, after this lawsuit was filed, they provided Mr. Conrad's reports. They continue to refuse to provide most of Mr. Samuel's reports.
Just to clarify that, I understand what you said. Is there also a dispute about redacted, some of the redacted, some records that you do have that have been redacted? Is that an issue or not?
Yes, it is an issue in this sense. The governor has taken the position that even redaction won't resolve any problems for him. He has actually said to this court, and if I have a note of incredulity, it's because I am, that that's not enough of a protection for him because his subordinates might not agree with a decision about what to be redacted, and therefore they would not be candid with him, even though, of course, they would be consulted about any redactions. So they've argued that's not enough to protect the governor's interests. Mr. Chief Justice, if it please the court, I would like to say to this court in response to your two questions that there are four principles that should control your decision in this case. The first principle is that Article 3, Section 6 of the Ohio Constitution does not grant a broad privilege to the governor for communications to him.
Do you recognize executive privilege in Ohio or not?
No. Neither has this court.
You think it does not exist?
It does not exist for the reasons I'll go through with you, but it does not exist, has not been recognized. And more important, Justice O'Donnell, on the facts of this case and the record you've been provided, presidential communication privilege, which is what they're calling executive privilege, doesn't apply either.
Well, executive privilege is far more broad, as we've talked about, deliberative. It encompasses a great deal, but they're only asserting, as I understand it, the communication privilege. But my understanding is you don't recognize executive privilege at all.
Well, no, Your Honor. I guess we're having a semantical confusion in my mind. The governor has been very precise in what he means by executive privilege. He has said, I'm talking about the privilege that has been given to the President of the United States called the Presidential Communications Privilege. There are other forms of executive privilege, in particular the deliberative process privilege,
yes,
which is critical to this discussion, but the governor has waived it.
He has or has not?
He has waived it specifically and expressly in his brief.
Well, if it doesn't exist, how could he waive it? So it must exist for him to waive it?
Well, Your Honor,
I'm confused what you're arguing here.
He has waived any defense based on deliberative process. He said to this court, and this goes to the heart of the problem. Let me see if I can try to address this.
You got issue number one. You got three more to do.
Yeah, I know.
Give him a chance to get his three issues. But,
no, that's all right. I prefer to respond to questions.
So then we know where you are.
Look, the separation of powers doctrine doesn't support giving the governor the unique presidential communications privilege, because it is not an absolute doctrine, especially as applied to the Ohio Constitution, and it involves the delicate balancing of overlapping authority between branches, which is done by the deliberative process privilege, but the governor's waived that in this case. He's waived the defense. Secondly, Article 3, Section 6 does not grant a broad privilege to the governor, and anybody who claims it is ignoring the language of the statute, as Justice Pfeiffer pointed out, the history of that provision, the countervailing provisions, one of which has been mentioned already, and most important, the reality that the governor in Ohio gets most of his powers, not from the Constitution, but from the General Assembly, which has, in the modern era, legislated his powers. Third point. In this case, and I cannot overstress this, if you look at the documents that have been provided to you, they don't qualify for either privilege. They do not involve any deliberative issues. There's no policy in them. Most of them are about Black History Week, Women's Week, people getting promotions, offices being open. They have nothing to do with the decision of the governor. They are decisions of his subordinates exercising their independent statutory authority and involve no decision on his part. So they're not deliberative. And, as I'll get into in a second, they don't even qualify for the presidential communications privilege as that was defined in the very case they rely on in Ray Sealed. My final point. There is absolutely no authority, in this regard, your second question, none whatsoever, to create a high executive privilege that excuses the governor or any other state official from having to testify just because of their position. Now, let's take Article 3, Section 6 first. Listen to the extreme argument here in light of history. Article 3, Section 6, when it was passed, allowing the governor to get reports from his subordinates was at a time when it was adopted when the legislature appointed the executive officers of the state, not the governor. So what the governor is asking you to believe is that our constitutional makers and the public that supported them were saying the governor could get reports from people who were beholden to, appointed to, and accountable to the legislature, and he could prevent the legislature from knowing what those reports are. That is so ahistorical that it is beyond belief. Historically, there could have been no intent. In fact, the legislature's purpose was to at least let the governor get information from people who they appointed and they controlled.
But Mr. Gittes, can I ask the question here? Senator Dan is here as an individual, just as any individual in the state. We're not talking about a request from the legislative branch to the executive branch. We're talking about a request from an ordinary person in the public under the public records law, are we not?
Yes, and that's why we're entitled to the records. The General Assembly is the only branch of this government that has any language in its authorizing constitutional provisions allowing secrecy.
Then do you think Stephan was wrongly decided?
Stephan is being distorted. DeStephan is exactly what we've talked about in our briefs. It's a deliberative process privilege case. All Stephan said is that the deliberative personal notes of a judge aren't subject to the Public Records Act. If the governor were here talking to you about documents that involve deliberative discussions and ask you to protect those, we would be having an entirely different discussion. That's not what Stephan's about. Stephan proves our point. This court has recognized the deliberative process privilege. And this is why I want to emphasize they have overstated the separation of powers.
So does that bring you to the conclusion that we should recognize it for the other branch? The legislature has it. They've given it themselves. The Constitution has some general language. We have it because we've given it to ourselves.
Yep.
here's the governor who would seem ought to have some confidentiality in making policy decisions or gathering facts. Let me give you one example on the deliberative process, because it raises the issue to me how limited it should or should not be. Let's assume that the director of Rehabilitation Corrections sends the governor a memo saying tensions are very, very high among the inmates at Correctional Institution X. This is what we are doing about it. That's just facts. Doesn't ask the governor to do anything. No policy, just informing the governor of a situation that could obviously become serious. Now, under deliberative process, would that be privilege or not? Would that be public?
Your Honor, that's a close question, and without literally reading the exact language, whether it does actually opinionate or propose something, it's hard to tell. I would say if it's purely factual and it doesn't have confidential information, because deliberative process privilege protects confidentiality, and there's many forms of that both in the Public Records Act and in the case law of this court. If it's purely factual, no confidential information, no policy analysis, it would be disclosable.
So it would mean then that the director would have to meet with the governor someplace and tell him orally, or her or him orally, this is the situation. To keep it private for a short period of time.
I must emphasize, if it has confidential information in it, it would be protected under deliberative process privilege.
Oral, we're talking about writings here, but when we have to write and decide what is or is not available to the governor, it really doesn't matter whether it's on paper or it's an email or it's an oral communication. Oral isn't any different than writing, is it?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. Because
how so?
Because the interests being weighed are different. The legislature has.
Well, in Nixon, what they were after was oral communication in the Oval Office.
Absolutely, and it was it's this court's decision when there is a civil case or a criminal case or a specific legislative hearing, whether or not there should be a privilege for oral communications. And I submit again, and I hope I'll have time to get back to it, certainly not a presidential communications privilege. But here, it's records. And here, this court has been advised by the legislature, which is empowered to make this decision, that we have established statutorily, in terms of Justice O'Donnell's question, a need. We believe that in performing our function to assure open government, to provide for the welfare, safety, and security of workers in this state, and I could go on down the list, we believe the records should be public because it affords people an ability to assure themselves of safety and security.
Counsel, are those records public in their original, when they're still within the possession of the department, before the information is compiled and reduced to a written report for the governor?
Well, yeah, that's a very interesting question, Your Honor. If someone made a request at the precise moment that the memo had been prepared but not shipped over to the governor, under their theory, it would not be available because
it's intended. How about the raw material, for want of a better word, that is distilled and put into the report? Is that public record?
It depends on what the materials are. Many of these memos aren't. They're suggesting this is just a narrow little area of reports. I submit they have not defined it so narrowly, and it's not so narrow. In many cases, the information in these reports may not be available anywhere else. Even though they're factual, there's no particular document or data collection or other information that would have the information that's conveyed in the short little paragraphs in these reports. And so it's not true you automatically can find it somewhere else. They've provided no evidence that it's available anywhere else. And yet it's not deliberative. It's not sensitive.
Can you give me an example of what you're talking about? What wouldn't be available within the records of the individual department that become available because they're reduced to a one-paragraph format and shipped to the 30th floor?
I'll give you an example, and it seems pedestrian, but how about the paragraph where Mr. Conrad reports that one of his employees, for money, agreed to cut his hair for charity, and they raised about, I think, $350 because he had 15-inch long hair and cut it. Now, the governor says that is worthy of this court ruling on whether or not all governors in the future will have executive privilege. I can't get that information somewhere else, whether it's important or not. I don't care. It's not available in any other
document. Not looking at a content analysis. That's not the argument here, to look at a content analysis. They're looking at the governor's authority is absolute, absent a court or legal proceedings, legislative, grand jury, some kind of inquiry that would then identify the content of information and subject it to scrutiny if there is a resistance on behalf of the governor in releasing that information for an official governmental proceedings.
Justice O'Connor, the problem is that's what the governor is asking you to buy into as an absolute. I decide, don't bother me. Mm-hmm. That's not even the presidential communications. And let me explain. First, the separation of powers, if you take a look at the unanimous Supreme Court decision, which this court has followed their doctrine on separation of powers, in Clinton versus Jones, it emphasizes there is not total separation here. And they quote James Madison saying, and I'll quote it, separation of powers does not mean that the branches ought to have no partial agency in or no control over acts of each other branches. As the court points out, and as this court has pointed out, you and the legislature and the executive are constantly overlapping in your authority. Legislature passes laws that you have to enforce, gives powers, takes away powers from the governor.
Counsel?
It's not that easy. The point here is, this court said in Bray, the point of separation of powers is to prevent the abuse of power, not to protect a branch. So what should this court look for? It should look for the solution that protects the interests of the governor being able to get candid advice, protects truly sensitive material, but
my question is, your arguments seem to imply that you would or do recognize a deliberative process privilege. Am I correct in that?
Absolutely. This court has recognized a deliberative process privilege before.
And you recognize
in the context of the judiciary.
You recognize it for the governor?
That's the question that is being begged.
Well,
in
you
this
tell
case.
Us that the governor ought to have some ability to have confidential information. What is the parameters of that, in your opinion? What is the privilege that gives him that? Privilege?
In my opinion, if we actually had deliberative materials in this case, this court could use its own guidelines and the guidelines of many other courts and say, we're not going to recognize the extraordinary privilege the governor is asking for. We are going to allow the governor to do deliberative process privilege because of the four protections. Number one, it does protect truly policymaking sensitive information,
but that argument is in direct contradiction to your argument that public records trumps all. You seem to be saying it doesn't matter what defense is asserted. If you have a Public Records Act, it's a public record. Now you're saying, but there is perhaps a right to a deliberative process protection. How do you mirror that with the public records argument?
Your Honor, I have never said or argued that the Public Records Act trumps all. It clearly doesn't. The legislature has adopted exemptions. It has provided a catch-all exemption, which would encompass the common law decisions of this court. If this court, as it did in Steffen, decides to adopt a deliberative process privilege, it would automatically be incorporated into the Public Records Act.
If we were to find a deliberative process privilege, but not an executive communications privilege.
Your Honor,
My question isn't finished. If we were to find one, and we were not to find executive, then how do we apply that to this case? Or is it your opinion it's waived, but it only applies to future requests?
And I apologize if I didn't follow the question exactly. If this court, in this case, finds a deliberative process privilege, it would only be prospective because it's been waived in this case.
Okay. Counsel, let me test the deliberative process. And I'm also interested in testing what I asked Counsel Trafford, and that is, what are the outer boundaries? And essentially, we're asked, how much do we eviscerate the Public Records Act with what we're being asked to find implied in the Constitution. Let me give you a concrete example. The Bureau apparently lost $300 million by shorting the 30-year Treasury bonds. If that fact was just communicated to the governor in one of these reports, doesn't ask for advice, is that covered by either? Let's take it a step further. They lost that. They apparently also told the auditor, the outside auditor, bury this in a footnote. Now, if that's communicated and communicated, let's say now this is unraveling, and so someone over there communicates to the governor, here's what we did and here's what we discover. Some of our people did when the auditor came around sniffing. We said, stick it in a footnote. And the memo says, we may have some legal jeopardy here. And is giving the governor some implied request for advice. Does that then go into deliberative process? And with the first example where it just says, heads up, we lost this, and it's my understanding, despite this, the governor's argument that he needs this privilege to protect candor isn't exactly what he was getting in these memos. But how would that break out? And then maybe a third example, if someone down the line in the investment shop sees this going on, knows it's not being reported, and emails the governor directly saying, Governor, you ought to know what these people over here are doing, and I have the impression, Governor, they're not telling you. Privileged or not privileged, and under which privilege?
Okay.
Three different examples.
Let me take the first example, which, as I understand, is just a purely factual report about financial losses. That would be not privileged. Let's assume it's coming from the head of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation. That would not be privileged under either test, because as In re Sealed explains, even the presidential privilege doesn't apply to communications which aren't directly involved with a president making a decision or from a person who is called a dual hat executive. That is, he's not just an advisor to the president. He has his own authority in his own department, and if the report concerns things that he's in charge of, that he's power to decide, and the thing's already been decided, and just reporting on it, it's not protected even under the presidential communications privilege. It's exactly what In re Sealed says. It's also not protected under the deliberative process privilege because it doesn't propose a policy. It doesn't involve confidential, statutorily or common law privileged information. It's not deliberative. Second example, you've got a mix, as I understand it.
Right.
In the mix situation, the presidential communications privilege would say the entire thing, even if 90% of the report was factual and you had a separate little conclusion separated on a separate page, you can't get any of it. That's what the governor's asking for, just like the president. However, on the deliberative process privilege, that would not necessarily be true, because the deliberative process privilege says these following things. If it's factual and the factual part can be separated from the recommendation, you get it. If it's also, to add to the question, it doesn't allow you to selectively share the information to cronies or special interests. You can under the presidential communications privilege. On the deliberative process privilege, if you show it to somebody who's not covered by the privilege, you waive it for everybody, public, legislature. And then lastly, which touches on the more difficult aspect of this, because of some of your comments, Justice Pfeiffer, if it involves misconduct, governmental malfeasance, presidential privilege would protect it absent some kind of criminal prosecution. Deliberative process privilege doesn't apply to communications, even deliberative communications, which involve misconduct. So The second question is protected by presidential, not protected, at least the portions that are factual, by deliberative process, maybe not protected at all if it involves misconduct. The third example, an employee emailing the governor, if it's purely factual, if the employee is not subject to some statutory or common law confidentiality, it is disclosable under both.
Okay, now, one more question about the outer boundaries, because we're asked to interpret not the U.S. Constitution, but the Ohio Constitution. In Article 3 on the executive, it says the supreme executive power shall be vested in the governor. Well, that's clear. But in Article 3, Section 1, it says the executive department shall consist of a governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, auditor of state, treasurer of state, and attorney general, who shall be elected. And so does deliberative process or executive privilege apply to all of those other folks who are constitutionally mentioned as the executive department?
Well, Your Honor, I suppose the argument could be made that the executive privilege, as defined by the governor, the presidential communications privilege, could apply to any executive. They argue, I think inaccurately, that at least one other state has applied it beyond a governor. The deliberative process privilege is a common law privilege. It's for this court to define. To my knowledge,
where it starts and stops would be up to this court.
Absolutely. I would say that the legislature, at least to this point, has never indicated in the public record statute or at any other time any disfavor for the privilege. I mean, there's not been any direct action regarding the Kraft case, the Steffens case. But it's a common law privilege. And even though it's not directly in the powers clauses, I would make these points. People have to remember that the executive powers that the Constitution of Ohio talks about for the governor weren't very many. He was a very weak governor historically. Secondly, as I emphasized, we aren't saying that it may not be appropriate for the court to do that delicate balancing between the operational needs of one branch and the other, which we believe that a carefully constructed deliberative process privilege would do. But it isn't literally in the Public Records Act. It is not literally in the Constitution. And Article 1, Section 2 could be read as prohibiting giving any executive officer any kind of privilege. But that's a delicate choice for this court. All we can ask this court to do is just remember, this isn't absolute as the governor's trying to tell you. It's not an all or nothing thing. Give me the presidential communication privilege or give me nothing. And what is very troubling is you're being asked to make this historic presidential decision on a record which wouldn't justify either. You would be making an advisory opinion. You don't need to decide whether the privilege exists in this case or the extent of it, because if you look at those records, they don't meet the presidential communications privilege, applying the dual hat and presidential decision making.
How do we know? Because you haven't seen them yet, have you?
Your Honor, I am arguing based on what's been released. Now, it is true, we haven't.
But there are all these reports from Public Utilities Commission and so forth. You haven't seen them.
Well, we haven't seen the other SAM.
If you have, I'm just assuming you have from your brief. But
you're absolutely right, Your Honor. I'm basing this on what we have seen.
Counsel, you want the executive assistance reports to the governor, not the department heads' weekly reports. You want the process is the department heads submit their weekly reports, and then presumably the executive assistants, or EAs, devise another report that might be of a different caliber that then would be going to the governor.
Well,
Your Honor, that's Mr. Samuel's report.
That Mr. Samuel's report, but I urge you to actually read the few.
I've read a few.
You'll see that in most cases, he's just reporting what Conrad's telling him. So he's just another form of communication for Mr. Conrad. Not having seen the other reports, I have to go on what I have seen. I suspect it's simply another version of getting the executive official's information to the governor, largely factual, many times perfunctory, sometimes already public, but decisions the executive officer has made, not that call for any action from the governor. The other point that this court asked about, and I let me say first, Justice Resnick, I did not mean to cut you off, and if you have, I apologize because I insisted on talking when you asked me a question, and I didn't hear the question.
That was not my question. That was Justice Stratton's.
I'm the one you cut off.
But thank you.
I will be lashing myself as soon as I leave the courtroom. This court also asked the question, which hasn't been addressed at all, about this high government executive testimonial privilege. And all I can say to the court is, just very briefly, look, even President Clinton, who didn't want to be deposed in the Jones versus Hirschfeld case, turned over an affidavit that gave a basis for the court to decide whether he should have to provide testimony. You know, the governor or no state official is above the law. It's not a burden to ask the governor to do what Clinton did, which Lee Iacocca did, which other governors have done, and many state and federal officials. If you believe you have a specific reason, other than just being the governor, for not being required to testify, you provide an appropriate affidavit that I've got a conflict, I've got important state business, I don't have any knowledge, whatever it might be. And these courts in this state are fully authorized by this court and the civil rules to protect the person. But the notion that he or any official should have a right simply by saying, I'm the governor, ipso facto, I don't have to testify.
Did you want to address the issue of standing, that Senator Dan is here individually and not as another, before you conclude?
Sure. Justice Donnelly, he has standing by statute. This is the
Under the public records law.
Under the public records law. And so the General Assembly, in its wisdom and with its authority, the only branch specifically authorized to deal with secrecy, says we believe it is a need, it's a necessity for the public to be able to get what it defines as public records. And if this court wants to, it can determine appropriately under the separation of powers that in certain limited circumstances, not involving misconduct, really involving deliberations, like for judges in the Steffen case, that need is going to be outweighed by the countervailing need for specific confidentiality. But this case doesn't present that, and certainly there is no constitutional policy or case reason to go to where the governor is asking this court to go, which says it's all protected, no matter how mundane, no matter whether it involves a decision or not, we're going to keep anybody from seeing it. That would be a violation of separations of power and a direct challenge to the authority of the General Assembly. I'm happy to answer any other questions if there are any.
Thank you very much
for your patience, Your Honors.
Ms. Trafford, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. And thank you for all the good questions and the good dialogue this morning. The point I would like to come back to is this notion that somehow the governor's position in this case is extreme, and it simply isn't. This position that the governor has taken on his behalf and on behalf of all the governors yet to come into the state of Ohio is not an extreme position.
If we understand Mr. Gittes' argument, though, he's arguing, I think, the governor says, I have an absolute right to just not reveal any of this information.
In response to a public records request. Again, what's the piece that's missing here is this is, the public records law says, if this is a public record, there is absolutely no limitation. Anyone, anytime, any content, that information has to be disclosed. That gives no respect to this principle that has been recognized by the United States Supreme Court, that has been recognized by other state Supreme Courts. There are five other decisions where state Supreme Courts have looked at this question of executive privilege and a public record statute, and in every one of them, they uphold the privilege. This is not an extreme position.
But this governor simply said, I'm not going to testify because I'm the governor. And we all know that presidents have been required to testify, other governors have been required to testify, and he didn't even come forward with any reason other than that he is the governor and he doesn't have to testify. Do you think that that should be his position?
Your Honor, and I would respectfully disagree with it. He didn't come forward with any reason. Obviously, in this context, we were on a very tight discovery. I think we had 5 days to do discovery. The governor's position was, this is a public records case. The information that is needed to decide this case, we certainly wanted the court to have a full record, is information about what's in these records, how they're used, why the governor's office has them. The governor simply said the best person to come forward.
She had no information. She could not respond to, and she didn't know what was in those records.
Your Honor, I would disagree in that as the director of policy and cabinet affairs, Ms. Barter was the one, she's the custodian of the records. She's the one that handles this process whereby the records come in and are used in the policy.
Well, is it accurate to say that where a president or a governor has testified, it has been a judicial proceeding, either a criminal proceeding or some other judicial proceeding?
Yes.
This, I think, was a deposition when he was asked.
It was a deposition.
That would seem to be some difference.
And it is a difference. It is different, Your Honor. And you know, the court asked us, do we have any authority for this principle that the governor just doesn't automatically be deposed? Your Honor, and we did respond. That was addressed by the Supreme Court in the Cheney decision.
Well,
and
counsel,
this is the United States Supreme Court. Special considerations control when the executive branch interests in maintaining the autonomy of its office and safeguarding the confidentiality of its communications are implicated. The court has held on more than one occasion that the high respect for the chief executive is a matter that should inform the conduct of the entire proceeding, including discovery. It's not unusual for a governor or other high-ranking official to say, let's start first with the person who has the most detailed information before you jump
counsel,
to this conclusion.
This, you keep jumping across and say, well, these exceptions and the court's involvement only come in criminal and perhaps civil cases. This is a civil case. Senator Dan has filed a civil suit to enforce a compliance with a state statute. It's in court.
Yes.
And it is a civil case.
If you're talking on the discovery issue, what we were talking in the discovery context applies even though there is a civil case pending. The courts recognize that even though there is a civil case, when you're talking about deposing a governor, when you're talking about deposing the president, there still is some modicum of respect that says we will use our Rule 26 proceedings to see if we jump to the most intrusive form of discovery from the get-go. And that's what was happening in the discovery context. The person who was providing the information, and we certainly agree, when it comes to public records, what the court wants to hear is from the holder of the records, what are the records and what are the facts we need for this case? And we did provide the appropriate person to provide that information.
Thank you, Ms. Trafford.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.